Thanks for agreeing to do that.
So I was asked to talk about what we know about Higgs boson and lab limits on various decay modes of the Higgs, and also to talk about theory and models as little as possible. So I will try to do that. Nevertheless, I want to mention at least a little bit the motivation for considering non-standard Higgs decays, because after all, every experimental limit is only as interesting as the motivation that goes into setting it. And of course, a lot of motivation overlaps with Dave's talk, but I will give it my personal bias. So let's start with the motivation. Of course, LHC is coming, so there is no motivation needed. There are various models in which Higgs decays in a different way than it does in the standard model, and so we should be prepared for it. Is there any pointer? No.
Doesn't seem that way.
Okay. Nevertheless, there are quite few motivations to consider non-standard Higgs decays. First is that our most popular model for physics beyond the standard model, the supersymmetry, generically predicts quite light Higgs, somewhere in 100 GeV range. Also, precision electroweak data prefer Higgs to be quite light, again, somewhere in 100 GeV range. And also, the largest excess of Higgs-like events at lab is at about 100 GeV for reconstructed Higgs mass. So this would be perfect match between prediction of our most favorite theory and whatever we have so far from experiments, if there was not this ugly limit on the on the standard model Higgs mass coming from that, which is 114.4 GeV, which means that the usual prediction from supersymmetry is way below the limit. Also, precision electroweak data, although they will move somewhere somewhat to the upside, are below the lab limit, and also the largest excess of Higgs-like events is well below the lab limit. Nevertheless, if Higgs does not decay in the way as it does in the standard model, then standard model limit does not apply, and suddenly all three kind of virtues of light Higgs can be realized. So any model in which Higgs decays in a different way than it does in the standard model can have very light Higgs, which would be in agreement with precision electroweak data, and even this largest excess of Higgs-like events can be not only background fluctuation, but it can be a real thing. So I will just briefly go through this in few slides. Then I will mention a simple example where Higgs decay in a different way, and then I will review experimental limits one by one, and that's gonna be the main part of this talk, and then I will conclude or not, depends on time. Okay, so let's just say a few words about this prediction for the Higgs mass from our most popular model. So Higgs mass in MSSM is roughly given by this formula. So at three level, you see that Higgs mass is not heavier than about 91 GeV, the mass of the Z boson. And there are two ways to make it heavy: either to take SUSY very, very, very heavy, stop mass is much heavier than top mass, you have to take them much heavier because the correction is logarithmic, or you can increase the mixing in the stop sector. So the effect of mixing is clearly visible on this plot. This is Higgs mass as a function of the mixing in the stop sector. It does not matter what the overall scale of SUSY is. You see that the difference between no mixing and so-called maximal mixing, mixing for which the Higgs mass is maximized, is easily of order 15 GeV. So if you have a model that leads to this large mixing in the stop sector, then you have Higgs easily quite heavy, above lab limits with fairly light stops. Nevertheless, there is something called typical mixing in the stop sector, because both top soft trilinear coupling and stop mass are driven in RG evolution by the same thing, by Bulino mass, typically to the same value at the weak scale. So it does not really matter where you start at some large scale. It doesn't have to be the gut scale. It can be any large scale. If you just start with random stop masses and soft trilinear coupling, and evolve these parameters to the electroweak scale, you end up with so-called typical mixing in the stop sector, which is of order one. And with typical mixing in the stop sector, there comes typical Higgs mass. If you forget about all possible logarithmic corrections, and you just include this finite correction, which does not depend on the overall scale of SUSY. If SUSY is 5 GeV or 500 GeV, it doesn't matter, because the size of this correction is kind of constant. You end up with Higgs not to be heavier than about 100 GeV, and being exactly about 100 GeV plus minus couple of GeV in a large range of tan beta. So no matter where you start with soft SUSY breaking parameters, as far as you evolve few orders of magnitude in the energy scale, you end up with typical Higgs mass, which is about 100 GeV, somewhat smaller for smaller than beta. Okay, so this is quite robust prediction from light SUSY.
Sorry, okay, yeah, go ahead.
No, please ask.
No,
please ask.
I was gonna ask if there was a favorite region 10 beta, but I guess not.
Well, of course, different people have different favorite regions of tan beta. Gordy Kane has 1.5, exactly.
Oh, that's off the bottom of your...
Yes, but you can then have very heavy SUSY and things like that. Other people have tan beta 50 as favorite, because then you can get Yukawa coupling unification and so on, and there are various other regions of tan beta which are popular for different reasons. Okay, so as far as our most popular theory goes, there is quite a robust prediction that it should not be heavier than about 100 GeV, with 100 GeV being somewhat typical value, meaning that if you randomly generate 10 points in the SUSY parameter space, as far as SUSY is light, you 9 of them will have mass 100 plus minus 2 GeV, and probably the last one will have 97 or 103 GeV or something like that. Okay, so then there is a search limit for the standard model Higgs at lab. The results of all four collaborations are presented in this plot. What is expected from background is normalized to this dashed blue line. So if there was no Higgs, they should see some wiggle around the dashed blue line. What they see is this dark line here. So you see there are two major excesses of Higgs-like events. First is at about, well, let's start with this one, at about 115 GeV. And this is also responsible for setting the limit of the Higgs mass on the standard model Higgs mass 114.4 GeV. This excess can be interpreted as standard model Higgs at about 116 GeV, wherever this prediction crosses the line, whatever comes from the experiment. The excess is about 1.7 sigma, and you remember that it came from Aleph mostly, actually only from Aleph. The other excess is at about 100 GeV. It's about 2.3 sigma excess, and this excess did not cause much attention because it cannot be interpreted as a standard model Higgs. Standard model Higgs prediction is here, so it would be down somewhere there. If there was Higgs at about 100 GeV, they would have to see 10 times more events than the number of events that corresponds to this excess. Nevertheless, this excess is quite interesting because, unlike 115 GeV excess, which was visible at Aleph and not in other three collaborations, there is some excess of events in all four collaborations for about 100 GeV Higgs, and also in 4 jet events and other than 4 jet events. This depends on what z decays to. If z goes to jets, then you have 4 jet events. If z goes leptonically, then you have 2 jet events, and so on. So 100 GeV excess is kind of robust, and that's what you would like.
Sorry, what is this, the 4 jet thing you just said?
Oh, okay. So
there's some.
So this is how Higgs is produced at lab. Higgs goes to BB bar, and Z goes in all possible ways. So if Z goes to jets, you have 4 jet events. If Z goes in other way, neutrinos or B plus, C minus, and so on.
These are just not B tagged then or something.
Well, the Higgs still would go to BB bar, so you would still.
But I mean, what is this? What is this search here? This is just unflavored.
So this is Z to anything except jets. This would be Z to jets.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is what you would like from a real excess that you don't have one experiment where you have access, the other experiment where you have deep in the same place. You would like to have all experiments somehow contributing to the combined access, and that's what it is. And it's exactly where supersymmetry would want it to be, right? At about 100 GeV. And the last piece of hint for white light Higgs comes from precision electrovic data, as we heard in the last talk. The central value is about 76 GeV. It will move a little bit up, not that much, I guess, few GeV up. Even more interesting plot is this one of mass of W versus the top quark mass with this central value. One sigma allowed region from precision electrovic data does not cross the 114 GeV, the standard model, the limit on the standard model Higgs. It will probably change. I guess it will touch or at least cross a little bit. Nevertheless, you can see that central value is way off. And if you imagine 100 GeV Higgs, it would be lying somewhere here. It would go right through the middle of the one sigma precision electrovic data based on lab 2 and Tevatron and the old lab 1 NSLD data. It doesn't mean much. Nevertheless, it's quite nice to know that it would go right through the middle of the overlap of these two regions. So we have prediction from our most popular physics beyond the standard model that Higgs is about 100 GeV. Also, largest excess of Higgs-like events at about 100 GeV, and also precision electrovic data wants to have Higgs quite light. So everything seems to suggest that Higgs is at about 100 GeV, and it's perfectly possible if Higgs decays in a different way. And that's why non-standard Higgs decays are actually even better motivated than the standard ones. There are a couple more kind of theoretical hints why non-standard Higgs decays are nice. First of all is that Higgs to BB bar coupling is very small, as David mentioned, and we discussed it quite extensively, so I will just mention it. So if you have some new particle, it will be very simple for Higgs to decay into this new particle. You don't have to work hard as far as model building goes. And second is that there are usually some that we don't really know what the Higgs sector is. For example, in the MSSM, there is this famous mu problem, and which is actually asking for extension of the Higgs sector. The most popular extension is that you replace the mu by extra singlet, or in principle, there can be way more complicated Higgs sector than this, in which case you actually have some extra particles, and if particles coming from this extra sector are quite light, Higgs can decay into them. And that's probably the simplest example in which Higgs decays in a different way than it does in the standard model. If you add just this one extra singlet, suddenly new decay modes open. Higgs can decay into two other Higgses coming mostly from this extra singlet, which then decay to 4 taus, 4 jets, 4 gluons, 4 bs, or 4 whatever else, depending on the mass of this light CPod. And there are, if CP1 Higgs is where you would want it to be, at about 100 GeV, there are basically no experimental limits as far as CPod Higgs is below 10 GeV, so that it doesn't go to BB bar. So something like this would... So if Higgs goes most of the time, let's say 90% of the time, to something that you don't have any experimental limits for, or we did not bother to search for, or simply experiment is not sensitive to, and remaining branching ratio of Higgs is the usual, it's going to be BB bar at about 10% level, you can have everything you ever want from Higgs. Higgs can be at 100 GeV, where it's predicted from SUSY. It can completely explain the excess of Higgs-like events at lab, and it would be in a nice agreement with precision electrovic data. So this is just one example. Of course, there are many more. So what do we actually know about Higgs boson?
Can you, do you have any update on that L3 analysis?
Oh yeah, sure. It started so long time ago that I'm even considering removing it from this slide. So the analysis was done at event selection level. Just you take some cuts which are designed for picking up 4 tau events at lab, actually at L3, So at event selection level, the analysis was finished last summer by a student of Kristallin. Student then left, a new student was supposed to come and to continue the analysis on this, do full likelihood analysis from this subset of events which were selected by this by the first analysis. The student is Russian. She had a problem of getting visa, so she did not get to Princeton at the beginning of summer. So she did not have whole summer to work on it. She got to Princeton at the end of summer, at which point she realized that she has to do these qualifying exams and stuff like that. So she preferred to do these qualifying. Of course, Kristallin did not know about that. He thought that she is working, but from the husband of her, who is a student of Ed Witten, I know that she actually was not working on it at all because she focused on qualifying exam, which she successfully managed to pass. I think at the end of January or beginning of February, and since then I was told that she's actually working on this search. So she just started working on it a couple of weeks ago, and she's having tons of difficulties because it's a 10-year or more years old software which does not compile on this, and these libraries do not exist somewhere, and she has to do all kinds of things with that. But she seems to be working on it, so.
Short
answer
is no.
No, but there were bottlenecks which now seem to have.
Right.
Okay, so let's get to the limits, and I will go through it one by one, and since I'm a theorist, I know basically nothing about them, so feel free to comment at any point. So at lab, Higgs should be produced in association with Z boson, this process, and search is a constraint quantity, which is the ratio of ZZH coupling in your favorite model compared to that of the standard model, which means basically production cross-section, and branching ratio of Higgs decaying to a given channel on which the limit to which the limit applies. So usually limits are presented for standard model like Higgs, assuming that the coupling of Higgs to Z is the same as the coupling in the standard model, meaning that Higgs was produced in the at the same strength as the standard model Higgs would be, and branching ratio to a given final state is 100%, meaning that psi is equal to 1. So unless I specify something else, this is assumed in those numbers I'm going to give you on next page. So first of all, let's start with the standard model Higgs. Higgs is produced with standard model strength, and it decays to BB bar and tau plus tau minus in the usual standard model ratio, 90% to BB bar, 8% to tau plus tau minus, and the remaining to some other things. And the limit comes at 114.4 GeV. If you assume that there is a Higgs which decays in the usual way as it does in the standard model, nevertheless, it's produced much less. It has reduced coupling to Z. The limits look like this, and we already saw them in the previous talk. You can see the excess at about 100 GeV, which means that if you have, so this would be something like MSSM Higgs. In MSSM, you have two Higgses, so they can share coupling to Z. Nevertheless, they decay to BB bar and tau plus tau minus in the standard model standard model ratio. So if you have a Higgs which is at 100 GeV, for example, it can decay to BB bar and tau plus tau minus with the standard model branching ratios if GZZH is reduced to about 0.5 or 0.4. Okay, so if you have light Higgs which couples to Z much less, it can still be there, and whatever, of course, it can be arbitrarily light if the coupling to Z is reduced. Of course, then it is not the Higgs you are looking for, because you are looking for the Higgs that couples to Z with standard model strength, because that's what gives mass to Z and W, right? So then this is some extra Higgs. The Higgs you are looking for is still heavy, and that Higgs is all that matters. So this is standard model Higgs. Then there is a kind of flavor independent search for Higgs decaying to to jets. It can, so it's not assumed that Higgs would go to BB bar most of the time, and to light jets much less as would be usually assumed from the standard model. And this limit is comparable to the usual standard model Higgs. It's about 113 GeV, so Higgs goes to light quarks or whatever. The limit is about 113 GeV. Then there is something called thermophobic Higgs. Higgs decays to gauge bosons like W and offshell W and Z and offshell Z or gamma gamma with standard model branching ratios. So you just forget about decays of Higgs to fermions. Then you get about 110 GeV. Then there is a limit on Higgs decaying to gamma gamma. If it goes 100%. To gamma gamma, the limit is about 117 GeV, but I really do not understand this limit. How can Higgs decay to gamma gamma? I don't really know, because I mean, how can it decay to gamma gamma and not to W and ZZ, right? I mean, Higgs has to couple to Z.
Have some super heavy quark loop and have a gauge phobic Higgs.
But how do you produce Higgs if it doesn't couple to Z? Then you don't produce Higgs, so the limit cannot exist.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
So,
but you can couple to produce it as well.
How did they get 117? Is my question.
So I don't understand, if Higgs would couple just to gamma gamma and doesn't couple to anything else, it would never be even
that's
produced.
That's the leptophobic case.
So this would be fermiophobic. It doesn't go to any quarks or leptons.
Fermiophobic,
I think it is, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I don't even understand why this limit exists, but okay, it's nice to have it. Okay, then there is a very useful limit. Higgs goes invisibly, so they just reconstruct whatever gives you the Z, and it's assumed that whatever Higgs decays to leaves the detector. For example, Higgs can decay to neutralinos go out of detector, or in some crazy model, Higgs can go to neutrinos, and so on. So whatever Higgs decays into, if it's not picked up in the detector, it would fit into this limit of Higgs decaying invisibly, and the limit is again quite comparable to the limit on the standard model Higgs boson, about 114 GeV. Then there is very important limit in my view. For me, it's the most important limit, although it's the weakest one. Higgs goes to anything. It's model independent limit, so they just look at Z going to E plus E minus, or Z going to mu plus mu minus, and they do not assume anything about what Higgs decays into. And this limit is quite weak. It's only 82 GeV. And unfortunately, it comes from Opel. It was not done by other three collaborations. So if other three collaborations did the search,
that limit must have a second dimension too, right? Some coupling to Z.
Oh, it's assumed that it's produced in the standard model.
Oh,
way,
did they put out a 2D plot?
Yeah.
They did.
Right. 82 is actually was a left fluctuation. They should have only done 75 GeV. The one thing I don't understand about that analysis was when, and maybe you thought about it more, at the beginning, to motivate it, they say Higgs could do something totally insane. It could be a continuum of Higgs's, which I don't know, infinite width or something. Or just totally crazy, I'm not insulting anyone, but totally crazy assumptions about what the Higgs could do. To motivate a model-independent search, and then they have to make a decision on what their efficiency is to reconstruct the Z in these left-hand shares. And the choice they make is based on simulations for insane Higgs. I don't know how they simulated it, but then they got something like 28% for electrons and 30% for muons to reconstruct the Z at left with that mess.
So they weren't looking at the recoil mass distribution?
They were, but they had to make a decision of what was the efficiency to pick up events to reconstruct the Z in the left front
heavy
channel.
Mass, the Z is moving, I guess. No,
well, it's there's a lot of other junk in the system.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's extra
electrons. The efficiency is based on other junk in the event.
Right, because you have to know how
so
well
so they
reconstruct
the Z. They simulated every model they could think of, is what my understanding was. and then they just took the lowest efficiency for reconstruction out of every model that they had. At any given mass point for the Higgs, they just said, what's our worst efficiency out of all of these different Higgs?
So the they're dominated by the craziest model.
Well, I mean, it's actually a continuum of Higgs is, right? If it's really a very wide resonance, then presumably this limit doesn't apply, right? Yeah.
Because then there's no peak in the
This only applies if you have a narrow resonance.
Yeah. Well,
right.
That's my question.
So the theory is
if you have a broad smear, then your limit doesn't apply.
Yeah. So I think the efficiencies they calculate are really more based on the idea that it's a narrow Higgs, but it's decaying in funny ways, and then they just take any of the funny different ways and then see what the efficiencies for reconstructing the Z peak are.
Sort of a spherical decay in tetrahedronic. Estimating those efficiencies, I don't know how to make it. Is 30%, I don't know if people remember in that phase, but is 30% a reasonable efficiency for mu plus mu minus reconstruction? In other words, if it's a clean event, would it be 40% or would it be
95%?
Oh, 95.
So you're saying this limit may be very pessimistic.
It may be pessimistic
for some of these models. I mean, because you would still get a lot of the time get an isolated pair of leptons from the Z, and the efficiencies are much higher than
right.
What they assume.
Right. So for example, just Higgs to 4 tau, you might want to run it through the model independent, or just run it through and ask what the efficiency is in the leptonic channel of the Z. And if the efficiency is better than what Opal did, you get a better limit without looking at the tau. Just asking if the rest of the event makes the efficiency better or worse.
It's really a missed opportunity, except for all those efficiencies.
Oh, it is a missed thing, yeah.
Stone tablets.
They're on stone tablets.
There needed to be a sensible benchmark for them to,
My guess was, assumptions about these sorts of things, is Opal did it, nobody else did it because of that one thing. How do you set the efficiency on the How do you truly do a model-independent search if your efficiency actually depends on the model itself?
They could do more searches for different assumed efficiencies.
Yeah.
Is it totally too late? I mean, if there were some theoretical benchmarks in Monte Carlos for them, would that help? Or would that?
We're waiting for Russian visas and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what it takes to make
totally stupid exposed to look at. Yeah.
But probably in most reasonable decays, there's some reasonable geometric separation between the Z decay and the rest. And I wouldn't imagine it would affect it.
But that's what he's saying. If they end up with a really low number, there's no paper? I mean,
there's a paper.
There's
a note.
So
it's a note. There's an open note.
Can they explain or they don't explain?
We'll put it on the website.
Okay.
Right, John?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you send it to me.
Okay, why don't you just parameterize the efficiency and do a modeling research? Can you say that?
They
just didn't. And it's what Neil said. They just assume the worst efficiency for every mass.
Does anybody understand how they get such a low efficiency?
Is there a thesis?
95%.
A clean Z with nothing else in the event. Yeah, 95%. But if you've got other hadronic garbage around, of course you're going to lose it, especially with electrons. Muons, maybe you can still survive. The muon even being in a jet is fine. If you just combine all pairs of muons that make a Z, doesn't matter what else is around in there.
Okay, so if you had 4 cows, which of course is going to give you a bunch of leptons, at least one with pretty high probability, do you think that would interfere at the leptons? Would it be useless when?
So this would be a Z to 2 leptons plus 4 cows.
4 cows.
There's certainly a common part.
Now, presumably, they pick out the lepton pair, which makes a Z. And that leaves everything else, which they just ignore, right? That's the whole point of the analysis.
Presumably the strategy.
Yeah.
So just looking at the plots, it seems like they took three scenarios where the scalar decays invisibly, E plus E minus or BB bar, and took them into all those. At least this is from
the
plots.
Scalar decays invisibly
into electrons or B quarks, and then took them into all those three.
So two more leptons in addition, can you say that the efficiency drops to 30%?
Why definitely
it's
be
a draw.
Yeah, yeah.
No, look,
if the Z is really there, really decaying to leptons, then you don't care what other leptons are around in first order.
Oh, wait.
At least that's how I do the analysis. I actually read the paper.
Oh, sorry, this is for when I think this is lep 1 when it produces Z.
Oh, no,
Z,
not the
lep.
Yeah, don't look at the lep.
No,
sorry,
not
lep
1. This is definitely lep 2.
This is super light. They
oh, that's a super light.
I mean, is this
okay for lep 2? They look at BB bar, gamma gamma, glue glue, and you know.
So do they give this the efficiency separately? And
yeah, and they're all roughly 20 to 30%.
Even in the 2 muon
they're
case?
All
roughly.
So there's something more going on here. Than
yeah.
The yeah.
Maybe they have a very narrow mass window for the Z. For the Z.
Right resolution down
so, but they didn't take something that's particularly crazy and like very
messy thing,
I think.
So that limit isn't really model independent then, in the sense that they look at specific decay modes and probably place cuts on their events to make them match those decay modes. In which case, a 30% efficiency is not so crazy.
So you're saying the low efficiency is because of cuts that they've made that make their
select the other,
so it's not really a model. It's sort of it's not really a model independent. It's just some logical or of several searches
right.
Or something.
But still, I mean,
well,
it surprises me 30% in the case where the other guy pays 2 muons, given Don's number of 95%. That's still
no, but he's saying it's a red. Must be red.
For example, with BB bar, the B tagging efficiency won't be so high.
No, forget the BB bar. I want to discuss the mu.
Well, also, I don't understand why would their bound be so much weaker if it was just a couple of different decays and you don't know the branching rate. That's their model, right? There's a couple different decays, and they just don't know the branching ratio. So the branching ratio could be an arbitrary mixture of these decays.
Well, but that's not the way.
And then the
no,
well, that's
no.
Then I don't understand.
It's model independent in that they only look at the Z part of the event, up to the decision about what the efficiency is to reconstruct the Z. So they don't care what the Higgs does. But it has nothing to do with what the Higgs is doing.
But
this
flip
list
around
of
for
decay channels
see.
Is just to help estimate what the efficiency is.
Spencer
is saying that all of them give you almost the same efficiency. But what John was saying was the efficiency probably comes with from the detector resolution of the Z, and then putting a very tight cut on what you call a Z. You can get low efficiency by saying it has to be a Z within 1 GeV if your efficient resolution is 3 GeV.
They wouldn't do that.
They wouldn't do that.
This has to do more with the boost of the Z assumption, is what you were saying. And they take the worst case scenario just to.
Well, that's not good. I mean,
no,
they
the
do it. Look, here it is. It's a function
yeah,
of Higgs mass. Once you've got the other thing specified, that's determined.
Oh, you're saying there's a cut associated.
So S is the scalar? That's
yeah,
the,
S is the scalar.
Yeah.
The guy who would know the answer to this question is going to be here tomorrow.
Who's
Bruce Melotto.
So maybe we should have that discussion tomorrow. Except Bruce, he did not, he asked him to give
yeah,
the discussion. Is he on the schedule for leading the discussion?
That is figure.
So the question is, how can you get so poor?
It's 7. What do you want to look at?
Well, I'm looking at figure 3.
But figure 3, is that the lep 1?
Oh, is that lep 1?
That's lep 1.
So this is their efficiency.
Yeah.
And these are just the different models.
Just the assumptions for what the scalar decays into.
So there isn't. So there's one that's EE, for example.
Yeah.
That's the cleanest. That would be
the
cleanest
the
one.
Answer, yeah.
So why, even there, they never get up to 50%, right?
Yeah. So maybe just.
Well, if they have really tight cuts on their leptons,
yeah.
With a 70% efficiency per electron, square that, you're suddenly at 50%, and then
tight cuts on the new view side. It could be, if we could be really persnickety about it.
Saying the efficiency cut might have just come from demanding that the z goes in a certain way. I mean, just the branching ratio for the z. Is that what you're saying?
So it's a reasonable question. Why not do e equal to e?
Yeah.
Right. Maybe they just wanted to avoid any possibility of combinatoric confusion.
Yeah.
Well, but that seems like something that you.
I mean, am I allowed? I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I mean, isn't it true? I mean, the whole psychology at LEP was you were supposed to. If you're not going to discover supersymmetry, you're not supposed to discover anything.
I'm just saying that.
We're not allowed to say that.
Wait.
They're more ecumenical.
It's more confusing than that. If you go to figure three, which is now, I guess, what we're understanding to be the LEP one block, there they have z going to EE in the EE decay, and when z goes to mu mu, they have the mu mu decay. So it's reversed in terms of which decays of the Higgs they actually consider for the efficiencies. What's that?
Would be mislabeled block?
It could just be a mislabeled block.
No.
It's a note.
It's.
Most likely explanation is it just cut hard on every leg.
So you only want two
anything epsilon to the fourth gives you 30%.
Wait, but here they mean C star, right?
No, it's
isn't it Z produced
it
and then it goes to Z star
it only goes up to it only goes up to a scalar mass.
Oh, for left one you mean.
Yeah,
oh,
left one,
no.
Right. That's the value.
Why is that?
Well, if the left one would be producing the Z, then it's easy, and then the Higgs gets produced. If it's lighter than the Z, then it gets produced. It can be produced that way.
So, they went back and reanalyzed the left one.
Maybe because they were looking at for a very light wave, it might be better.
Having the Z resonance gives you less
than what I mean. So if it's a very light wave, then it might be more efficient.
Let's see. But we have ruled out.
So there's some idea of.
So you just think, John, you just think they just cut
all
hard.
The
just to be conservative, they just
mass
cut hard.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is there, should we move on or should
we? I mean, from this you can kind of see that the efficiency is going to be quite a hit, right? Because I assume the signal is this dash line. And they put such a small window on the Z mass that you're going to lose at least half this. So you're already starting with 50%.
What are we looking at?
I'm just looking. I think these are the cuts they did for different scenarios. And so you can see that the Z-mask window cut in plot B already is picking out just a small part of the signal. So that may be just the dominant.
The upper
issue.
You're looking at the upper right plot here,
right?
Right
here.
Yeah.
So they're picking this block and leaving those, which is already about 50%.
That's just a Z cut.
That's just
a Z.
Doesn't
help what's going on.
Okay. Is there anything else? Anything else? Well, so Bruce, as John said, Bruce Mulatto will be here tomorrow, And maybe we could continue the discussion with him there. That would be, you know, we might get some more information. You want to give it back to him?
Yes.
So in any case, it's a pity that we do not have a little bit more information, or they did not do better job with this model or somewhat model independent searches, and especially nothing was done by other three collaborations.
Can I just ask you, just for schedule, I think we should definitely finish, obviously we want to finish this talk. Right now, lunch should be starting now and going for 2 hours. I just wanted to know whether it made sense to, so let's just finish the talk and we'll extend the lunch hour to make sure we have 2 hours for lunch. But take whatever time you need, I don't think we're in a hurry.
Okay, so just to summarize this page, if Higgs goes to two standard model particles, the limit on Higgs is kind of the same as the limit on standard model Higgs, somewhere in 114 GeV range. So let's look if Higgs goes to more particles than just two standard model particles. For example, if Higgs goes through some other scalar, I use A, as motivated from this NMSSM thing, but it does not really matter what the other scalar is. Effectively, Higgs goes to 4b. The limit is from, again, LabHigs working group combined all four experiments, I guess. The limit is about 110 GeV if Higgs goes to 4b 100% of the time.
So this wasn't actually a search done during the lab running?
Actually, this search was... There was some search of Higgs to 4b was done a long time ago, but that was very weak. This search came at in summer 2005, actually after we broke this.
Such
yeah,
well
that's interesting.
In fact, I mean, this was one done is by pushing the part.
So actually, before these modified Higgs decays business, there were basically no relevant limits on Higgs decaying to more than two particles. So Higgs to 4b about 110 GeV. If this CPO Higgs or whatever other Higgs is lighter than about 10 GeV, then it of course cannot go to BB bar, and then the relevant mode would be Higgs to 4 tau, or perhaps you can design your model that you make this guy not to couple to BB bar, in which case it can couple to something else, so it can go to taus, mu c's, whatever else. So effectively, if Higgs goes to 4 tau, the limit is about 86 GeV, and again, this is one of my favorite because 86 GeV is chosen by hand. It's an upper limit chosen for running of Monte Carlo by experimentalists, so they did not bother to set limit for Higgs above 86 GeV, although they could have. So Higgs to 4 tau is 86 GeV. Then if Higgs goes to anything else, for mu's, for e's, for gammas, there are no published limits. Nevertheless, these possibilities are probably excluded up to the kinematical limits. I talked to many people about this. Everybody seems to tell me that somebody would have seen Higgs decaying to 4 mu, 4 e, or 4 gamma, that it would be picked up in some searches. I haven't met a single person who would tell me, oh, I would have seen Higgs to 4 mu.
Okay, so
or gamma.
Let me comment on that. If you're looking at low mass A, we've certainly searched at the Tevatron for inclusive mu plus mu minus productions and looked at the mass spectrum in a wide range. And what do you see? You see the J psi, a falling continuum, the epsilon mm-hmm. peaks, then a falling continuum, then the Z, and then nothing else out to hundreds of GeV. Really nothing.
But
so
these two mu, you're talking about di mu.
Yeah.
Di
muon.
Okay, so we're talking, would you have seen a
small,
show up on
the very small mass.
Wait, inclusive di muon?
Right.
Yeah.
He's just saying if there's an A in the event,
if there's an A in the event,
the muons, they pick it up no matter what the mass is.
And
the
it's
A.
above the noise, if you call it that, from the continuum production, we would have seen it.
Yeah, but okay, so we're talking about a very low mass.
You can find the J.
So let's say 7 GeV or something like that, like the super jet analysis. No, but
So that would be relevant for this.
Okay. We looked for 200 MeV style Higgs's back in 1990 at LEP 1.
No, no. I mean, 200 MeV would be this one. No, this one would still be heavy.
These don't
yeah.
couple of Z's
yeah.
at all.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this one is 100, this one is 200 MeV.
No, we didn't see, we didn't look for that.
So those would be relevant because if this guy is above that, then it would probably go to jets and stuff like that. So you want it to be like. So it would be nice if somebody can actually write at least in some blog that, oh, you should consider this as a limit, because otherwise I would have seen it in my search.
Well, okay, so, but these are two highly boosted pairs of
mu, sorry,
200 MeV Zs. What's the lifetime?
Actually, in the 4E channel, that's just the dipole term search, isn't it?
No.
Oh, well.
Higgs goes to two E plus E minus pairs, which are highly boosted on the top of each other.
Well.
They get one cell in the counter, isn't that cool?
They wouldn't reconstruct as converted photons. Because for converted photons, they come out with like zero invariant mass. No opening angle. 200 MeV
so
is way outside.
So there are no limits.
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Well, the four photon. Right?
Four photon.
Because the four photon length you picked up like a diphoton.
Hmm.
So
if they're highly boosted.
And
right.
then, it, but then again, it's a matter of the. I don't know. 200 MeV, gamma, gamma, I don't.
Marc Aurelius said, at least with regard to the four photon, he said he personally knew all of the four photon events, but he knew all of them. he was friends with all of them, hanging out with them, he had beers with them. And, so, because I asked about the four photon in particular. I didn't ask about four mu four e, but it's like so. What if the game? I think that like the zeta mu nu plus four photon event.
So how is this produced if it's not coupling? You know,
this is so you have to first produce Higgs. That's the only way to produce this because it appears in the decay chain of Higgs.
There is certainly an H to AA search at very low masses. I have to really dig that one out. Some of the initial MSSM Higgs searches tried to go as low as in mass as possible.
For A?
Yeah.
But what about?
Right.
Was it at the time where
for
you could reach
age, like
100-ish?
Yeah. I have to go back and look it up.
Hmm.
But Marc probably knows much better.
If there is some note on it or just some, it would be good to make it available somewhere
no
on the website.
No longer access to internal Aleph notes.
Some lost information.
All of that. Just put it out in the open space.
So,
they have to hide.
Kyle Kramer said that it. That there was some hope to do this, but that they didn't want to do it until all Aleph analyses had actually been completed, and that there was one Aleph analysis that was still ongoing, but maybe it's out now.
It would be wonderful to have that full set from all years at your fingertips.
But I think there is some intention to actually do that with the Aleph.
Okay. So beyond this, it's basically up to theorists to decide what the limits of Higgs boson are. There are no straightforward limits. For example, Higgs going to pair of neutralinos, which then decay to two standard model particles and missing energy, as Spencer and Neil are going to talk about. They basically have to decide what limits from LEP apply. So they came up with 90-100 GeV lower bound on the mass of the Higgs boson, and of course you cannot come up with a number because it depends on a number of things. For example, it decays through off-shell leptons, so it's kind of model dependent. You have to make some reasonable assumptions and so on. And if Higgs goes to six jets or whatever, as David was talking about, again it's pretty much up to him to decide what the limit on the Higgs mass is. So this is as far as what we know about the heavy guy is concerned. Now, if Higgs goes through some other particles, through some new particles to standard model particles, then there might be some limits on this intermediate step on this lighter Higgs. For example, it can be picked up in z decay. So what you want is that this extra particle you introduce to the model does not couple to z significantly. Otherwise, it will be seen. Or if it is quite light, this would be relevant for these decay modes. If it's below 10 GeV, then it can be seen in upsilon decays. Just ignore this transparency. Whatever information is given here. If you have a light scalar particle which couples even negligibly to BB bar because B factories are high luminosity machines, then you can you have a chance to see upsilon decaying into CP of Higgs, or which is again motivated by this NMSSM, but it can be any other scalar than photon, and then it depends on the mass of this lighter Higgs, what it decays to, either tau plus tau minus, if it's above tau threshold or two light quarks. Two light jets or two photons, depending on the model. And branching ratios for this are quite small, at the level of 10 to minus 4 all the way to 10 to minus 7 in a given model. In different models, the branching ratios can be smaller, larger, it depends. And actually, it can be searched for at B factories if they do a dedicated run on given upsilon resonance. Upsilon 3S seems to be the most favorable for reasons I'm not going to discuss here because it's not really relevant for this talk. And Babar is actually running since December, I think at the moment.
It's
Babar, it's finished. Oh, I thought I saw last week it was still on Upsilon 3, yes.
I think it's
Okay, so it was running on Upsilon 3S, so there will be definitely some limits on extra light scalar particles that couple very little to standard model matter. And in meantime, Clio published, Clio did the search of upsilon to some scalar and photon, and the current limits are at the level of about 10 to minus 4. So if you are building your favorite model, you should be aware of these possible kind of indirect limits on your scenario. So 10 to minus 4 does not really exclude much from, for example, these NMSSM choices. It touches the upper part, and it applies only to quite light CPO, quite light scalars. And that's about it, as I know about limits for on the Higgs boson. So let's just briefly summarize. Non-standard Higgs decays are highly motivated, and they require modified strategies for Higgs discovery at lab, Tevatron, LHC, and even opportunity for B factories. So modified Higgs decays affect many of four of major high energy experiments. And I will stop here. Thank you.
Any more questions? Okay. Well, let's break for lunch.